You're listening to Catch the Current,
the coolest seafood podcast out there from the team at Undercurrent News, your trusted source for seafood prices, news, and data. I'm Amanda Buckle.
And I'm Lauren Castiglione. So last Friday, U.S. President Trump signed an executive order exempting a range of food imports from the reciprocal tariffs he implemented in April. It was exciting news for everyone but those in seafood.
Womp womp. That's right. In the ultimate psych move, seafood is not included in the more than 200 food items that are now exempt. However, the National Fisheries Institute is requesting to get seafood on that list. NFI CEO and President Lisa Walenda Picard said in a statement that the trade group applauds the Trump administration for moving to ease tariffs on some foods. She also used the opportunity to share that while seafood is the healthiest animal protein on the planet, rising costs have put it out of reach for many families. She stated, "We urge the president to include all seafood in tariff adjustments. This is critical to lowering consumer prices, maintaining American jobs in the seafood sector, and keeping Americans healthy and fed."
According to the latest Consumer Price Index data, overall costs for food consumed at home were up 2.7% in September. So for example, banana prices were approximately 7% higher, while tomato prices are 1% higher. Reuters reports that ground beef, which is impacted more by U.S. livestock shortages, is nearly 13% more expensive, and steaks cost about 17% more than a year ago. Seafood, as we all know, is getting more expensive, and the tariffs have not helped. Between April and July, U.S. seafood importers paid as much as $673 million in tariffs on some $10 billion worth of goods, according to data collected by NOAA prior to the shutdown. That's an average tariff rate of about 7%. NOAA's tariff numbers for August and September can be expected to be much higher as Trump raised rates on several large seafood source nations in August.
Regardless, NFI's Picard also praised Trump's efforts to continue expanding markets for American seafood globally and his plan to improve access for high-quality U.S. seafood products through the application of zero duties in both Switzerland and Liechtenstein will have a positive impact on American companies and is in lockstep with the roadmap laid out in the president's executive order regarding seafood competitiveness and economic growth. Our very own Jason Huffman did the research here. Switzerland sent the U.S. just 133 metric tons of seafood worth less than $2 million in 2024. That was mostly seafood soups and broths and fish oil. But NFI Chief Strategy Officer Gavin Gibbons told Undercurrent that getting seafood from these countries into the U.S. isn't the only point. He's hopeful that it could ultimately benefit our exports. So full story in the show notes.
Staying on theme with rising prices and things getting more expensive, Ann Mead Roerink, the president of 210 Analytics, just released the company's monthly review of U.S. seafood sales at retail. As expected, the trend of rising U.S. seafood prices continued in October. Per Roerink's analysis of the data, some grocery shoppers appear to be responding by tightening their purse strings. Both frozen and shelf-stable seafood sales took a hit last month due to higher pricing, with inflation cited as a key driver impacting consumer sentiment, according to the University of Michigan Index of Consumer Sentiment.
But the recent seafood sales picture wasn't all doom and gloom, according to Roerink. Salmon had a good month. So salmon dominated the fresh seafood category in October, with sales increasing 3.3% by value year on year to capture $379 million of the $754 million in total seafood sales for the month. Pounds sold compared to a year ago increased 1.2%. While tilapia saw some impressive sales gains, up 14.6% by value and 13% in pounds sold year over year, shrimp took the second spot in the ranking of items by fresh seafood sales. Fresh shrimp sales in October rose 7.2% to $79 million and were up 6.6% by volume. On the frozen side, shrimp did beat salmon for the top sales spot at $332.7 million, compared to salmon's $103.3 million. But that statistic hides the fact that frozen shrimp sales are down 5.2% by value compared to a year ago, and 13.2% lower by volume. Salmon, on the other hand, saw an 8% gain in dollar sales and a slight 0.9% in pounds sold in the month.
Roebrink said that when looking at the figures for the month, the U.S. government shutdown, which lasted the entire month of October, has to be taken into consideration. The shutdown, which ultimately went 43 days, finally ended on November 12th, but Roebrink said it took a toll on household incomes and consumer spending. Its impact was acutely felt by users of the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, which faced a funding lapse.
The relatively mild weather this year should also be taken into consideration, according to Roering. That's surely long gone now. I've been freezing.
I'm like, what is she talking about?
We're looking back to October. She said that canned products are often a stock-up item when bad weather is moving in. And last October, snowstorms, rain, and flooding across the U.S. helped shelf-stable seafood sales. But this year, the weather was, fair, and that fair weather negatively impacted monthly sales totals. So ambient seafood sales were down 4.5% by volume and fell 2.3% by value to $329.6 million in October. Shelf stable sales are expected to turn around as North America moves into its cooler months, which, like we said, is here. It's happening.
It's here.
I'm cold right now.
Reporting live from the cold.
I am freezing.
So, speaking of cold and sticking with retail news, let's talk cold smoked salmon. Miami, Florida-based St. James Smokehouse, which specializes in cold smoked salmon, announced this week that its St. Oak smoked salmon is currently available nationally across select Whole Foods stores, while its St. Fruitwood smoked salmon is available in select Florida Whole Foods locations. The woman-owned smokehouse, which split from its Scottish parent company of the same name in 2023, shared on LinkedIn that the launch represents more than just new distribution. The company said it's about the introduction of its fresh, modern packaging and renewed commitment to bringing something truly new to the dinner table.
And the packaging is really beautiful. I'll include a photo in the show transcript. It's very fresh and clean. It looks high end.
So the product launch with the Amazon owner retailer headquartered in Austin, Texas, comes 4 months after St. James completed its Aquaculture Stewardship Council recertification. Whole Foods does not require ASC certification specifically, but its quality standards required that farmed finfish and shrimp come from suppliers whose farms are third-party certified annually. The deal also coincides with Whole Foods' prediction that 2026 will be the year of the female farmer.
That's a trend prediction we can get on board with. And if you're at Whole Foods scoping out these smoked salmon options from St. James Smokehouse, then also swing by the freezer section because frozen seafood meal brand Scott and John's has launched salmon bowls and a new Alaska pollock-based meal, fish tikka masala. So these four products in total from Scott and John's will be coming to Whole Foods stores soon, but the brand can already be found at major retailers nationwide, including Sprouts, Target, Harris Teeter, Publix, Wegmans, Market Basket, and Giant Eagle. And I thought it was interesting, though, that Whole Foods didn't pick up a single shrimp dish, as that's initially how the company gained popularity in retail with its frozen shrimp pasta and rice bowls. And instead, the organic supermarket went with some of the brand's new offerings, including their honey sesame salmon, their lemon butter dill salmon, and the Baja fish taco bowl. And right now, the pollock tiki masala that I mentioned is only available at Whole Foods, and it's got the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute logo right on its packaging, too, which is really cool.
And to round out our retail news, we're going to exit Whole Foods, but stick with pollock. U.S. seafood giant Trident Seafoods has relaunched its frozen Alaska pollock line at Walmart 8 years after introducing its skinless and boneless frozen fillets to the retail chain for the first time. Its wild Alaska pollock whitefish loins are now available in all 4,700 Walmart locations across the U.S. The product is a slight variation from the wild-caught Alaskan pollock fish fillets and skillet cuts that Trident first launched at Walmart in August of 2017.
My shopping list this week is getting very long
We are
because,
hitting up Walmart and Whole Foods for sure.
yeah. And then I also thought we didn't get to cover it this week, but I also saw that Costco debuted in their pre-made section a lobster mac and cheese. Did you see that?
Oh, I did not.
I haven't been able to go to our local Costco yet to check it out, but that is like right in time for Thanksgiving. I get a little bit of seafood. You have your turkey, of course, but I feel like macaroni and cheese is like go to Thanksgiving item. So to add some lobster in and then have it right from Costco is like
And I'm
slam
making
dunk.
a mental note for the Feast of the Seven Fishes. That'll be a good option
There we go, too.
to
And it just
include.
takes it out of the way. You don't have to cook it. Anyway,
Yeah.
back to speaking of Alaska pollock. The fishery in the Bering Sea officially closed on November 1st, and Undercurrent has learned that the inshore plant sector has left about 10% of its bee season allocation unharvested. Undercurrent's Masahiko Takeuchi reports that it's the first such shortfall since 2007. This information is all coming after the U.S. government shutdown ended last week, and according to the latest catch report from the National Marine Fisheries Service, roughly 32,000 metric tons of the inshore sector's bee season quota remained in the water. And when you combine that with the 11,900 metric tons that went unharvested during the A season, which ran earlier this year from January 20th through June 10th, the inshore fleet failed to take about 7% of its annual allocation, totaling 43,900 metric tons.
The full deep dive from Masa can be found in the show notes. Now, to share some insights on haddock and cod. This week, the groundfish market is coming in with a noticeably firmer tone across the board. What started last week with some early strength in cod and haddock has now widened, especially on Chinese twice frozen products. So, cod, haddock, and even some Pacific cod items continued to push higher this week, while most other categories stayed fully steady on the back of expensive replacement costs. So for Atlantic cod, this was one of the biggest movers again. Twice frozen product out of China continues to climb. Loins were up 20 cents, and both shatterpack and IQF fillets added about 10 cents this week. Importers say it isn't so much of a demand story, it's a raw material story. So Norwegian and Russian H&G cod going into China hit new record highs, which is putting processors in a squeeze and keeping the US market fully supported, even though buyers are still cautious. Icelandic single frozen cod didn't move this week, but it's still sitting at historically high levels. Tight quotas and strong European demand are keeping a floor under the market. Pacific cod also leaned firmer. Twice frozen loins and fillets from China both inched up, while single frozen Alaska products stayed steady. The same raw material squeeze we're seeing in cod overall is filtering right into Pacific cod. Sellers aren't showing so much interest in discounting, especially with H&G values still rising. And haddock remains the standout performer in the whitefish complex. Single frozen Icelandic fillets added 15 cents this week, and Chinese twice frozen IQF fillets climbed another 10 cents. Globally, H&G haddock prices into China hit fresh all-time highs again, so the pressure is very real upstream. U.S. demand isn't red hot, but with Russian haddock banned and raw material costs soaring, both Icelandic and Chinese product are holding a pretty firm tone.
Moving on to some somber news, a beached juvenile humpback whale in the US state of Oregon had to be euthanized on Monday after becoming entangled in lines and buoys that included commercial crab gear. Undercurrent was able to confirm that the fishing gear had the markings of Oregon's licensed commercial crab fishery, and it's at least the second suspected whale fatality linked to the state's crab fishery in 2025, following a record four in 2024. The entanglement and subsequent death of the whale has heightened scrutiny of the West Coast commercial Dungeness crab fleet's impacts on protected marine mammal species. Oregon fishery managers were already on high alert after the first entanglement earlier this year. They said that added restrictions, including depth or pot limits, shorter seasons, and trip limits, were being considered if entanglements with commercial gear continued.
The entanglement reopens the conversation for ropeless gear technology. Conservationists are again arguing that attempts being made to reduce the amount of commercial crab gear and even closing certain areas off the coast have not stopped these whale deaths. Oceana, for example, believes that the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission needs to incentivize the use of whale-safe pop-up fishing gear. Meanwhile, Oregon Dungeness Crab Commission Executive Director Crystal Adams told Undercurrent that the fleet puts a lot of effort into avoiding entanglements, including a derelict gear program to keep gear out of the water. And just to get a sense of why the situation is so important, Oregon's commercial fleet had the largest volume of Dungeness crab on the West Coast in 2024 to 2025, with the fleet landing more than 15.6 million pounds for an ex vessel value of $96.2 million.
Joining us now on the pod to talk about a different type of crab is America's editor, Jason Huffman. Now, Jason, let's talk blue and red swimming crab, and I'm going to ask you to tell us the difference here, just in case there's some people out there listening who don't know the difference. But we just talked about this in the past couple episodes, is that they've been dealt a devastating blow in the form of the Marine Mammal Protection Act related ban. What's the latest in this ongoing saga?
I think the term you wanted to use was death punch. Sorry,
Sorry, yes, death punch.
Well, first of all, there is something you should know about me. I am a crab snob. It was largely the blue crabs called the Chesapeake Bay that is shared by Maryland and Virginia that first got me turned on to seafood. They are still my favorite kind of crab. My grandmother used to serve them steamed where we lived in the state of Pennsylvania, right over the Maryland border. And when I was just a boy and I got hooked, steamed crabs, crab cakes, you put them on the table, I will come running. But I didn't even know until I started writing about crabs many moons ago that we actually import more crab, different species, than we caught domestically. Blue swimming crab, BSC, from Indonesia, the Philippines, and other countries, and red swimming crab, RSC, primarily from China and Vietnam, as well as the same species of blue crab caught in the Chesapeake, Calanectes sapidus, imported from Venezuela. We import much more of the meat from these crabs than we could ever produce from our local domestic catch. So it's important what's happening to imported crab.
So yeah, I think a lot of people don't realize what kind of crab is used in crab cake, especially when you're out to dinner. I don't think it's really advertised. I mean, and then you hear like Maryland style crab cake. That doesn't necessarily mean though that you're getting.
Oh yeah. And I live in Maryland now. We have a great disdain for the terminology Maryland style crab cakes, because what does that mean exactly? So what happened, and you know this well if you've been reading our coverage and other current news, is that way back long ago in late August, NOAA issued a new set of rules that would effectively ban a large percentage of the BSC, RSC, and blue crab we import, starting as soon as January 1st, by banning a number of the foreign fisheries in which crab is caught due to some perceived problems with fishing gear and not complying with the U.S. Marine Mammal Protection Act, MMPA. Crab importers declared this was going to be a, quote, death punch, and they joined together with the National Fisheries Institute to sue NOAA in the U.S. Court of International Trade. Importers, of course, panicked. It looked like they were going to be unable to import a lot of product after January 1. So they started buying up as much as they could get their hands on. Prices shot higher and higher. Then, on October 31st, the U.S. Court of International Trade delivered some good news to the importers. In response to the lawsuit, they said they were going to give them 60 more days, or at least give the other country's government 60 more days after the federal government shutdown was over, for these import source nations to better make their case that they comply with MMPA. Based on sources' reckoning, that would give importers another 6 months in total to get ready for whatever happens. Problem somewhat averted. Indonesia, which accounts for about 46% of the swimming crab imports, appears to be back in the game, or potentially could be. Venezuela, however, never replied to the NOAA request for information, and they look doomed to be banned after January 1. Venezuela accounts for about 10% of the imports. Still, given the initial time, you would think there would be a reduction in panic, and there has been. However, prices remain high, like pandemic time high, almost $40 for a pound of BSE jumbo lump on average.
And that's crazy because who's going to pay that? Because you have to think about how many, like, what else is being factored into this, especially if you go out to a restaurant. How is anybody going to be making money on this?
Right. You're going to look at a menu, and after the restaurant or retailer factors in whatever additional costs they have, and whatever they want to have any kind of profit margin, and you start at $40. Where do you go from there? And will people buy a pound of crab meat paying more than $40, $45, or whatever it happens to be?
What's the
That's,
cutoff? What is the price point where someone's like, no, I've had enough.
yeah. Oh, crab's not that important to me.
I
Maybe steak.
love it, but not that much. Yep.
Yeah. But it leaves you scratching your head because that deadline has been kind of softened. And a huge amount of the crab that was going to be blocked from coming into the country looks like it may have a way to get into the country. People bought a ton of crab in advance of when the scary parts happened. So why are the prices staying so high? That's kind of the question that people were asking. And I asked our own price analyst, Gary Morrison, about that. He reports that BSE jumbo lump from Southeast Asia, always a good barometer on crab prices, is up 46% since mid-January. And it climbed another 0.6% this week. RSC jumbo lump prices haven't budged. And he gives a number of explanations for what happened. Supply still hasn't caught up with demand. Also, don't forget, we had these tariffs of 19% on Indonesia, 20% on Vietnam. So there are a lot of other factors going into crab prices that haven't really been softened.
So is anybody really catching a break then here?
It doesn't seem like it. Now, one of the sources I talked to is looking in the next month or so when the rainy season begins in Indonesia, because that usually stirs up a lot more crab production. If that happens, we might have more product. More product typically means lower prices. But There are a lot of folks who don't believe those prices are going to budge, even when they normally do. So we might be looking at high crab prices for a long time.
And you briefly touched on Venezuela, and to top off, the US, the military is at odds with Venezuela right now when we're blowing up a
Right.
bunch of vessels. So, I mean, that's completely, I don't think Venezuela products coming in anytime soon,
That
probably
seemed
not.
that's the consensus if you talk to people. I mean, it's bad enough they didn't bother to even try to submit documentation or paperwork to respond to NOAA's request for information. Now we've got this military conflict, and I don't think the Trump administration is going to be too forgiving of Venezuela over one of these small products that they import into our country. It just doesn't seem like we're in a positive place for Venezuela.
So now, without Venezuelan crab in the US market, where does that leave
That's about
us?
10% of the supply. So the folks I talk to believe that what that'll do is it'll put more pressure on the other sources. But China and Vietnam in particular, because they're the less expensive form of crab, they sell the red swimming crab. And the problem is those countries are kind of maxed out on production. So it's not like they can create more crab to fill the hole that Venezuela left. So when you have less supply, just like when you have more supply, it leads to lower prices. You have less supply, typically you have prices going up or basically being supported and standing still.
Jason, thanks so much for joining us in the pod. You can find Jason's full story in the show notes. Highly recommend you check that out because he jam-packed that thing full with charts too. And you know that undercurrents charts are top-notch. So again, link in the show notes. Thanks, Jason.
Thank you.
Before we go, I have another destination to add to our list of seafood eat food places to visit. It's called Seafood City. Turns out it's a Filipino supermarket. I have not heard of it, but they've got 37 locations, and apparently they throw some killer dance parties.
All right, I'm going to need some more information on that.
It's not all 37 locations, but there's one location in the Bay Area that had a dance party after hours. They extended the store hours from 9 p.m. to midnight, and you can, of course, still shop for your groceries, but at the same time, you can also indulge in the stores. They got like a street food market. And you can listen to a local Filipino, like American DJ.
That sounds awesome.
And I'm gonna put a link to the Seattle Times. They shared photos. The place was popping.
I mean, that is one way to get the seafood sales up in the United States. Just throw a major dance party.
It's kind of cool. So I wish more stores did that by us. I wouldn't mind. And that's like an easy way to like escape. The kids are like, I gotta go to the food store. Guys, and like it's 9 o'clock at night. Don't worry about it. Don't ask any questions.
Don't wait up for mommy.
Yeah, why are you going out to the food store in heels, mom? I don't know.
Anyway, that does it for us this week. But before we go, in case you missed it, Undercurrent News has just launched a new tool, the Global Salmon Price Tracker, which is open until November 24th. The tracker allows users to compare wholesale or first sale farmed prices from various origins in China, Europe, and the US. In addition, users can review in isolation Undercurrent's full weekly proprietary wholesale price assessments from China for farmed salmon from various origins, in addition to farmed and wild salmon in the US market. The platform also houses weekly price assessments for Norwegian salmon, FCA Oslo, Chilean salmon for Brazil, and Scottish salmon delivered to UK factories. Additionally, the tracker provides prices for farmed salmon from multiple origins in major EU wholesale markets in France, Italy, and Spain. Don't forget, the open preview of salmon prices will be available until November 24th, so act now. The link to additional details is in the show notes.